We're going to have Heather Champion. She's going to talk about algorithms and cosmos, theological reflections on the freedom and limit of human technology of the mind.
So let's see if we can...
I have a handout for you.
Okay.
We're on time here, and I think this is yours. Is it down here? Is it full screen? No, let's just do a slideshow.
Just use
the arrows right and left, and that's the laser thing. It's super weak. I don't think it's going to help you.
Okay. So today I'm going to be talking about algorithms a lot from many different perspectives, and this work stems from my part-time work as a research assistant at Regent College in Vancouver. And my interest in this project comes from my background in computational physics. I'm not a computer scientist, but I will be talking about it a lot, and also my background in theology. I'm actually going to read you a short paper that I wrote as part of that work for this presentation. And your outline shows some of the several quotes that I'm using and more, as well as the references. So, in contemporary society, algorithms are used to adjudicate social, economic, and political truths. In response, a rush of scholarship in the social sciences is attempting to grapple with their central role. Two leading journals in information technology and society have recently devoted entire issues to algorithms. Meanwhile, philosophers are also wrestling with the significance of algorithms in computer science methodology, theory of mind, and scientific models. The fundamental nature of algorithms is thus being scrutinized from multiple angles. Nonetheless, theological reflection on algorithms is noticeably lacking. For example, several recent reference works on theology and science do not even have an indexed reference to the term algorithm. In view of this neglect, this paper presents a theological account of algorithms as human ways of knowing aspects of the fullness and limits of creation that also recognizes their sociological significance. I will argue that the term algorithm should not be redefined to refer to complex socio-technical systems, as some social scientists would like, since this detracts from their inherent philosophical and theological importance as effective means of knowing creation. Nonetheless, I will show that they play a crucial role in legitimating social realities as fetish objects. First, the nature of algorithms as human ways of knowing requires theological attention. Like mathematics, it is curious that algorithms are so successful at modeling the workings of the cosmos. Yet even more plainly than mathematics, which prompts a wide variety of positions on its ontology, algorithms are human means. Simply put, they are effective procedures involving discrete steps towards an objective. They are rigged with human intention. Thus, the philosopher David Berlinsky observes that algorithms belong to, quote, the world of memory and meaning, desire and design, end quote, and express human needs in ways that other mathematical objects do not. He argues that computation, quote, suggests the mind immersed within the brain, the soul within the body, the presence anywhere of spirit in matter. An algorithm is thus an ambidextrous artifact residing at the heart of both artificial and human intelligence. Algorithms abstract from nature but function within it. A number of other scholars have also expressed how the algorithm couples human intelligence with material reality. Furthermore, while the peculiarity of the success of mathematics lies in how abstraction of empirical content often blunders on a subsequent material significance, the peculiarity of the success of algorithms is more that human imagination leads to better representation of material phenomena. Like natural human language, the ability of an algorithm to model reality well depends on the active involvement of the subject in making an analogy between a given reality and its computational representation. The subject is also involved in designing the practical recursive actions required for a dynamical modeling process. This means that algorithms do not explain primarily in terms of a static universal law, but in terms of a particular history. This history could include the progression of a numerical simulation, the evolution of a genetic algorithm, or the training of a neural network. By discretizing the representation of space and time, algorithms can model more complex phenomena than purely analytical methods. In many cases, either an analytical solution is unknown, infeasible to calculate, or less accurate than a numerical method. For example, the Monte Carlo algorithm is used in radiotherapy to plan for the distribution of dose in the patient. It stochastically samples the probability distributions involved in various particle productions and interactions, modeling individual particle histories beginning at the accelerator head and ending in the patient's heterogeneous tissues, where dose is tallied. Thus, medical physicists Seiko and Verhagen describe a Monte Carlo algorithm as, quote, a solution to a macroscopic system through the simulation of its microscopic interactions. While analytical equations that represent the macroscopic transport of radiation do exist, using them to model this full context of dose delivery to the patient also requires approximation and is actually less accurate than a stochastic simulation. The seminal theorist of computer science, Donald Knuth, describes the power of numerical solutions as he observes, quote, computational models are better able to describe many aspects of the universe than any other models we know, end quote. Elsewhere, he adds that what distinguishes algorithmic thinking from mathematical thinking is the ability to accommodate the progression of states and the reticence to reduce multiple cases to a uniform representation. He admits that this is, quote, sometimes a weakness of computer scientists because we don't try as hard as we should to find uniformity, but sometimes it is a strength because we can deal fluently with concepts that are inherently non-uniform. These observations indicate that it is not only abstraction of content that curiously leads to good models of creation, but also of representational form, as well as sustained attention to the dynamics of a complex system. At the same time, the freedom of abstraction in computation depends on the discovery of limits. Just as mathematicians attest to a strong sense of discovery in their work, computer scientists also discover the functioning and limits of algorithmic computation. Turing's model of the algorithm has been used to show that there are unsolvable problems in non-computable sequences and numbers. Since algorithms are human ways of knowing, exploring the limits of computation is part of understanding creation. Also, the advent of the algorithm itself should be considered a concrete discovery. Gödel considered the four different articulations of the algorithm given by himself, Alonzo Church, Alan Turing, and Emil Post something of, quote, an epistemological miracle in that they can be shown to be equivalent even though they are approached in concept from many different starting points. While algorithms are artificial in the sense that they are human abstractions, this discovery suggests that they are fundamental aspects of what is natural in intelligent beings. Berlinsky goes so far as to say that the algorithm witnesses to the very idea of intelligence. Therefore, algorithms occupy a liminal space between the mental and material as encountered in the freedom and limit of creaturely existence. The philosopher of technology, Carl Mitchum, argues that engineering action is inherently a bipolar concept, since it regards both the bringing forth of something new and the discovery of operational success. Yet, as algorithms are best understood as ways of discovering effective models rather than models themselves, they incorporate an even greater sense of the discovery of what is already there than the end products of other forms of engineering. Indeed, as ways of knowing, they are both discovered and invented. While I maintain that it is philosophically and theologically important to regard the nature of the algorithm from a technical perspective, the relationship between algorithms and society is pressing. Some scholars argue that the term algorithm should be extended to include the non-technical aspects of algorithm development, which are strongly coupled to the technical ones. For example, anthropologist Nick Seaver argues, quote, algorithms are not technical rocks in a cultural stream, but rather are just more water. Like other aspects of culture, algorithms are enacted by practices which do not heed a strong distinction between technical and non-technical concerns, but rather blend them together. However, redefining complex socio-technical systems as algorithms can lead to a kind of fatalism about the direction of technology and culture, as computer scientist and professor of media studies Ian Bogost argues. Moreover, in my view, it may impoverish interdisciplinary conversation by losing the nuance of the different cultural ideologies, practices, and values that comprise these algorithmic systems. Particularly, it fails to recognize that just as various scientific theories play a key but particular role in legitimating social realities among other factors, algorithms are one kind of crucial fetish for establishing social practices. It is important to understand how modern legitimations of society differ from ancient ones. I am using the term legitimate here in the sociologist of religion, Peter Berger's sense to mean all of the pre-theoretical assumptions, wisdom traditions, and systematic theories that eventually become taken for granted aspects of the way things are and ought to be. Berger argues that secularization actually has its seeds in the Protestant Reformation, which simplified the relationship between the transcendent and the immanent, eventually leading to modern legitimations of society based on the scientific, quote, nature of men rather than the nature of the universe. Yet contemporary appeals to the algorithm function in both this modern and a pseudo-ancient sense. The judgments of algorithms that deliberate up in the cloud are used to legitimate behaviors towards people grouped by certain features of similarity. Former data scientist Kathy O'Neill argues that this, quote, perpetuates our existing social stratification with all of its injustices. This form of social legitimation understands meaning in something beyond the individual, in the way that externalized intelligence sees things are connected together. At the same time, it uses a scientific or quantitative account of the human person for feature selection. Another example is how contemporary society invests the urban environment with intelligence and what could be said to be cosmic order. In the smart city, all objects use algorithms to serve as cognitive agents. This is a modern legitimation based on a particular model of the human brain, but it is also reminiscent of an ancient legitimation that appeals to a level of cognition beyond individual human consciousness. While algorithms are gaining unprecedented credence as means of legitimating social realities, the primary mechanism by which they gain the power to stabilize both these macro and micro cosmic social systems is not computational. Rather, seeing it as fetish suggests that it is not algorithms, but the perception of algorithms that gives them such a central role in social practices. Thomas, Nafis, and Sherman argue that the best way to understand their power is as a fetish in the social exchange between developers and users. In 20th century anthropological theory, fetish objects are understood to be those endowed with perceived capabilities beyond their actual functions and traded across an economic divide, which increases the scope of their social, cultural, and economic outcomes. These outcomes are then misunderstood as belonging to the object itself, but this confusion enables other effective outcomes. Associating algorithms with powers beyond their inherent capabilities is all too easy, since best practices include modular opacity, many development teams are organized into isolated cell structures, and there's often a considerable gap in technical knowledge between developers and users. Understanding algorithms as fetish respects that their actual nature is technical and offers a heuristic for studying the way that they have become central to social practices. It implicates parties on both ends of the exchange for the productive misrecognition of the fetish and its continuing centrality in culture, and does not judge a priori whether the initial faith invested in them is warranted. It keeps algorithms here below without raising them to what Thomas calls a technological sublime or resigning to a technological determinism. In other words, faith in the promise and possibility of algorithmic work may or may not be justified and may result in productive or detrimental outcomes, whereas faith in algorithmic gods and demons is problematic both from a secular and a theological viewpoint. So I have argued that algorithms are human ways of knowing, as they are often developed in rich interdisciplinary collaboration across the natural sciences, engineering, and mathematics. They offer different ways of knowing the fullness and limits of creation. Theologians must wrestle with their essential nature, which is grounded in the mental and material reality of human reasoning, and thus is part of the latent potential of creation. Asserting their potential need not include blind faith in a sacred reality of our own making, but considering how they function as fetish may reveal how human desire is both misoriented and generative. Algorithms may be artificial, but they are not fundamentally unnatural and are thus deserving of a theology of nature. Thank you.
That tell you how to do something.
Mm-hmm.
It might be showing you how to construct put something together. It might be visual or it might be text.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds from what you're saying that this term algorithm has taken on a new life of its own, and I'm afraid that I've missed out on this. I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Can you tell me how this happened and what these people are talking about? Really lost.
Yeah. So I think the social scientists are trying to say that the way that algorithms develop involves both computational aspects of how we figure things out mathematically and in software and hardware. And it also involves social aspects of what how humans are involved in the system. So not
what sort of social aspects?
So in terms of how the users actually end up using the software, whether or not that's what it was intended for, and how that actually subsequently leads to developing to subsequent steps in development. So it's a combined system. And actually, one of my sources is arguing that we should see them as practices. Because practices are human, and they depend on many, many things, not just the computational aspect of what we're doing, but what we actually do in a situation. So, does that help?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I may follow up on that a bit, because I don't know if I had the exact same question, but a similar one. The way I might frame my question is that if I view an algorithm as a, I'm going to say a process or a recipe, that's consistent with what you were saying. And you talked about an algorithm being human ways of knowing.
Mm.
If you had a Venn diagram, do you consider that to encompass all human ways of knowing?
Right.
Or do you see other ways and you're just focusing on algorithm?
That's a great question. I don't think they are all ways of knowing, no. but I think that they are more a part of human ways of knowing than we give them credit for, because there are different kinds of algorithms, and they don't all involve dividing and conquering different aspects of what we're thinking about. They can actually look for connections between things, and they involve a history and how the algorithm is trained. And so I think that they're more deeply embedded in how we think than we give them credit for.
So when you say how it's trained, I think you're kind of implying genetic algorithms, perhaps? Or not, and I don't want to put
right. Genetic algorithms do have a history, yeah. They do evolve over time, but even more so neural networks, which are trained in advance, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I'm also trying to contextualize this, and I'm sort of a similar question. So where would you place this discussion in the broader discussion of the limitations of science? For example, one of my fields of clinical medicine, we use algorithms as a clinical decision-making tool, but there's increasing recognition of the role of intuition, for example,
right.
in decision making, and limits of evidence-based medicine, for example. So
right.
contextualizing this in the limits of science.
Well, the interesting thing about intuition for me is that there's another source I have that talks about algorithms and stories. And he talks about how when you expose an algorithm to different situations, it starts to reason in a sense that has to do with what it's experienced before. But the situation might not be exactly what it's experienced before, but it's still able to intuit what it should do, because it's a little bit like this, a little bit like that, and a little bit like this, so I'm going to do this. So I think that, again, we don't give them enough credit for acting like intelligence. Yes.
So I think I kind of identified with the very first question, and I'm not sure if you're talking about algorithms in the sense that, for example, Facebook uses an algorithm to for it to know what to provide for you to see. When you log on to Facebook, you don't just get an automatic something, but it's Facebook's algorithm that says, this person wants to see this kind of thing, so I'm going to show them that. And I think that's the main use of the word algorithm in social sciences. Is that right, or is that
a that's a major use of the one of the word algorithm in social sciences.
I hadn't heard that word used until, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago. And for people who do work in computer science, they don't think of algorithms at all in that way. They're just a static
exactly.
set of codes, instructions you follow through. Whereas in Facebook algorithms, that's where you know, big money is involved, big data, and social engineering is kind of going on. And, and unforeseen circumstances in terms of polarization of thought and all of that.
Exactly. And that's why we have this debate going on whether we should extend the term to include all of those different actors and processes that are involved in what ends up showing up on our screen, or is it something that we should keep as a technical definition that a computer scientist would agree with? And so people do argue that no, we shouldn't extend the definition, that there are too many cultural factors involved in what actually ends up appearing on your screen. Like, yes, an algorithm is involved, but so are a lot of other values and judgments and people. So, yeah. Yes.
Another example is that there's, if one gets arrested, there's a computer program that courts use to give the probability that you will escape bail. And it turns out a group at Dartmouth discovered that the probability that of a white getting bail is much greater than a black getting bail. So there's obviously racial bias in this program.
Right.
And they said, well, what's the source of this? Well, it was based on bias in, bias out. In other words, it turns out the data that we used to program the data was that the probability of being arrested is of a black being arrested is greater than a white being arrested, and so that data went into the program, and as a result, the same bias was in the. So what do you do about that?
Yeah,
I think you have to be careful that if there's bias in the data, there was bias in the algorithm that was built into the algorithm.
For sure. Yeah, and I think that goes to show that what I'm trying to say, that algorithms are human, for better or for worse. There are ways that we can enact human practices, and the human practice of deciding who should stay in prison is something that we decide. It's our values, and it might show up in the data beforehand, or it might be just the way that we decide the algorithm should decide. It should the exact steps it should take to arrive at its conclusion. So, yeah.
I have a question about artificial reality, virtual reality, artificial intelligence. There's a debate going on philosophically about will computers ever rise to the level of complexity to generate a consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the answer is no so far.
Hmm.
The question is with your algorithmic discussion, human can be deceived and think there's a consciousness when it's indeed not. So it can be used for wrong purposes.
For sure. Yeah.
Can you comment on that?
In terms of whether a virtual environment or an artificial intelligence will ever rise to the level of a human intelligence, I can't comment too much on because I haven't done a lot of research in that area. Everyone has their opinion about that. Some of the sources that I've been exposed to would say no, because the human is an embodied creature and part of our intelligence lies in our material embodiment. I have a question mark because I wonder, like, as I was saying, algorithms explore freedom and limit in creation. And so if they can explore the limits of even tactile environments and things like that, I don't know. It's not a question I can really speak too much to. Sorry.
We can be fooled, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, we can be fooled.
We can be fooled.
Yeah.
There's one thing about the deep learning neural nets is that really the algorithm's, you know, fairly complicated, but not the most complicated algorithm we know, but the data is very critical. It's the choice of data and training that causes it to discriminate between, and the data volumes are so large now with these deep learning nets with the many graphics cards that it's difficult to even figure out what it's doing. So, yeah. I mean, I think humans do, you know, invent algorithms, and so they are human in terms of, like, the case Paul mentioned about the, you know, prisoners. But, you know, humans also select the data. But
yes.
Then the problem is, even after, you know, we can look at that program that was doing the parole thing, and we can figure out why it did that. The data is not all that complicated, but the volume of data in the deep learning, you know, in Google training somewhere, they're giant clusters for, you know, a few days, is really almost incomprehensible. So it it gets tricky. We can, you know, we can't even say what the bias is or what it's even doing exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That's another reason why algorithms are opaque, and even developers don't even understand what they're doing sometimes. So,
I mean, can you say? Is another way to say this is that these algorithms have emergent powers or emergent properties, right? It's scary in a way.
I'd say that's a topic for research. Yeah, it's an interesting question.
The Go program, right? The Go program. It played Go better than they thought it would.
Yeah.
And actually, along that line, if you haven't read Michael Polanyi's work.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, because the whole idea of tacit and
exactly,
all
yeah.
knowledge, and that's kind of where I was even leading earlier. Everything's tacit or rooted in tacit.
Yeah.
And so I'm intrigued by what you're saying, and I mean, you've raised some really good things. I'm just trying to get my mind around how to reconcile all
those. Yeah.
So the emergent concept is a big part of the philosophy.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. I'm super interested in intuitive ways of knowing in algorithms. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.